You are now listening to No Free Drinks, the Not Your Ordinary Dating, Relationships, and Sex Advice Podcast.
Join me, Wesley, your Keeps It Real co-host.
We were going out, I would say steady, for like 6 to 8 months. We just abruptly stopped having sex. So why are we not getting freaky? Like, what the f*** is going on? So she's like, no, you know, because I've renewed my faith in God.
I know how I am. Like, I'm not going to get no cheeks. I'm going to cheat on you. Brock, your knows-it-all co-host.
And then my go-to hookup one has always and will forever be Tinder. It's just like in the bathroom, like, cool, I got these 5-10 minutes. Like, just thumb game strong.
And Lena D, your no-chill co-host.
Oh, so do you go down on women? And there were a few men that said, no, like, I don't believe in that. And then I was like, oh, well, I don't believe in f***ing you, so we should probably end this.
Yeah, that's harsh as f***.
I mean, it's harsh as f*** to say you're not going to eat my pussy out.
Join us every Wednesday for
all type of societal norms being turned upside down.
Welcome back to No Free Drinks. This is Lena D. And today we bring you our third installment of the Wiser You Toolkit. And I'm joined by our co-host, Wesley.
Hey, it's Wesley.
And we also have a very special guest today, because as you'll see when we get into the topic, we wanted to bring you something that was more helpful around mental health and something that would give you actionable tools that you can use in your day-to-day. You remember that in our episode 29, Date to Win, we started talking about really assessing your mental and emotional health. And we gave you some tidbits on how to do that, but, you know, we're not experts in that area. So we really wanted to bring in somebody that is an expert, somebody that's very close to the area and that's really excited and passionate about this area in mental health, especially as it comes to promoting awareness for minorities and Black and brown folks. So I'm proud to introduce Esperanza. So,
hi, everybody. My name is Esperanza. People also call me Bonza, so we'll go with that name. I have worked in healthcare pretty much my whole professional life. So whether that's in operations, management, finance, in a lot of different facets. And I developed this, I guess you would call it a passion for mental health, through my personal experiences with it. So I'm pretty young, I'm 25, but since I was, I want to say like 16 or 17, I've been struggling with depression and anxiety in and out of different therapies. You know, it's affected a lot of my relationships and I've learned a lot, like a lot from it. And being a person of color that's in this space or wants to be in this space, I understand the different challenges that we face if we want to seek help or if we're looking for support in any type of way. So I kind of want my, you know, my next step to be something around helping people of color in this area, because there's so much ambiguity and there's so much stigma out there that I kind of want to fight against it and get people the help they need.
Awesome. And we're really happy to have you, because a lot of what we do on our podcast is talk about, you know, challenging societal norms or what people find to be the normal conversations to have. So if we think about the topic of mental health within, like, within our household, like even with our family or our parents or grandmothers and such, I've found in my experience, it's not something that's usually talked about. So it doesn't mean that there isn't a place for it within our communities. It's just that we have to build those communities and those support networks within ourselves based on the experiences that we've had. So because we felt that we didn't have a lot of expertise, we thought it was really important to bring someone like you that has had such like your own personal experience, but you've also are really dedicated to trying to build this out a little bit more, which we'll talk about later. But I thought that you would be a great person to really build this out and kind of like give us the little toolkit on people like mental health and awareness and how to really think about your own personal mental health outside of any dating constructs or because you want to date, but more for your personal self-care. So really excited about that. And I guess like tell us a little bit more about why you've gotten so like involved and passionate around promoting it and like really how that sort of developed for you.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I'm a big fan, so thank you guys.
Hey.
So my, I guess my passion for promotion, it really came about because of the trial and error that I've had in this space. So in the 8-9 years that I have been in therapy and out of therapy or thinking about mental health, I've seen like, I think I'm at 7 or 8 therapists. I've tried so many different remedies. I've been on medication. I've been off medication. I've tried holistic medicine. Like I've done all of these things. And I feel like a lot of those techniques aren't taught in this space. You know, people are prescribed, you know, a weekly therapy session and maybe some medication management, but mainly, you know, you have that weekly therapy appointment. But a lot of places don't teach you what you can do, you know, in the 6 to 7 days that are in between your appointments. So, you know, you can go to these sessions and talk about whatever you want, but if you're triggered on like day 2 after your session, what you're not taught to do anything, you know? And for some people, the therapy sessions, it's all about getting stuff out. But for others, it's more about developing these techniques that will get you through, you know, techniques that you can use for the rest of your life to help combat these thoughts and these feelings. And I feel like that's such an unpromoted area, a not promoted area. I don't know the word I'm trying to look for, but it's not talked about. It's not talked about really at all, let alone talked about in communities of color. Mm-hmm. So my experience in the trial and error of some of these techniques and the importance of developing these techniques, I feel like gives me a unique position in the promotion of mental health in communities of color.
So what are these? So what do these techniques look like? Because I'm kind of interested.
Yeah. So they vary. So some things that I do, you know, one thing that I do is I meditate. I try to meditate, whether that's, you know, 2 minutes on break or 15 minutes before bed, you know, something to just have a moment to keep me present and clear my mind. And I feel like there's a lot of, you know, when people think of meditation, they think of like some lake scene out of Final Fantasy where you're sitting by the creek and listening to the bubbling brook.
So basically you got to be a samurai.
Yes, exactly. So like they just have this unrealistic thought of what meditation is when you can really do it anywhere. Like I do it on the train, as weird as that sounds. Like I do, like wherever I have time, I try, and it helps keep me present. Something else, I write a lot because my anxiety causes, you know, a lot of racing thoughts, and I have a lot of thoughts in my head throughout the day. So helping me at least put those thoughts on a piece of paper and evaluate which ones are rational and which ones are irrational and just really, you know, label those thoughts really helps keep my mind straight. You know, therapy, of course, is also important in a toolkit, you know, whether that's weekly, biweekly, monthly, whatever. You know, it takes different shapes and forms. Exercising is also important. Like a lot of people think of exercising for like, you want to lose weight, you want to look good, you know, look good on the beach, whatever, but it also has a mental effect. And that's really an important aspect to consider. You know, there's so much acupuncture. I've gotten into that for the past year, and that's been really interesting.
I don't know if I could do that.
I get that reaction a lot, but honestly, it's not that bad. It really isn't.
How does it feel though? They put it in your pores? Like,
there's that stigma where you think you're laying down, and what is it, in Final Destination, where it's like this chick has all these acupuncture points on her body and then she like dies from, I don't know how, but that's not, I don't know. I feel like that's something out of Final Destination. But I mean, in reality, it's just a tiny needle that they poke in certain places and it helps relax you. Those are some of the things that I've used in my toolkit. Some people use Reiki. I don't know much about that. I just know it's a lot of like the flow of energy and just.
I was about to ask you what that was. Like, what is Reiki?
Yeah, it's definitely energy based.
Oh, okay.
It's more like emphasizing the good and getting rid of the bad.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's more, it's a lot more spiritual, but yeah, some people use that.
And it's like kind of, I guess, the concept of like surrounding yourself with positivity.
Right.
Exactly. Avoiding, I guess in that case, avoiding like confrontation or avoiding like toxic relationships.
Yes, that's important too. Like the little things that you can do in your life as far as identifying toxic relationships and getting out of them. That's also important because you could do all these techniques and if you still keep these toxic people around, it's not going to mean anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what's important to talk about with like toxic people, sometimes it's not even the intent of being toxic, but I think another component of it is people that aren't really aware of what mental health means or like the sort of like your toolkit and these like either routines or like habits that you form because they make you feel a lot better about yourself. They kind of like help you start the day off on the right foot. It keeps you going through the day. You feel happy. You're energized. It's not something that's like bogging you down. And then some people that don't understand the impact that that has on your well-being may be judgmental of the fact that you're doing that. Or even like people that make fun of people that have like either mental health issues or that people that have to take like extra time to think through things. Like everybody has a different experience, but there are sometimes insensitivities or biases that people can have.
For sure.
And I think a part of that is also raising awareness to what it is that people might do that isn't considered the right thing to do. Or it's like, you know, you're just being like you're stereotyping or you're being insensitive to like other people's needs, or if it's somebody that's in your life as a friend or a significant other, you're being insensitive to like what I need in my day to make sure that I'm happy at the end of the day.
Right. And they could be your best friends. They could be your siblings. They could be family, which makes it even harder to cut those ties. I've definitely had those relationships, especially in high school. I was told I'm overreacting. I just want attention. And that made everything worse, and it was from some of my good friends too.
What the?
So it's definitely out there, and it's even harder if it's someone that's really close to you.
Yeah, but I think that's what's important about not just having people think about mental health for themselves, but also having them think about how you could be an advocate or a supportive person or even like an ally to other people that even if you don't have those particular experiences, it doesn't mean that you can't be sensitive to them. But I do think that it's important to have a conversation so that people are aware of what they are. I know that in my example, like I tend to see myself as somebody that has like very little mental health needs, even though as I sit down and think about it, it's like, well, no, I need my daily exercise. Otherwise, I get very cranky or I need like my time to just be around people. And that's kind of like my therapy. Like some people like quiet time. I don't necessarily like quiet time as much. but it's like these are things that
it varies.
It varies. It's different, but it's my form of what keeps me sane and helps me lead a happy life. Mm-hmm. And just because it's not necessarily meditation, it doesn't mean that it isn't something that works for someone else. So you just have to be aware of it. So I've at least have checked a lot of biases that I've had because I've been that type of person that says, oh, well, like, why are you stressing out about it? Like, I don't think it's a big deal. But then again, that's in my, like, looking it through my lens, not necessarily looking it through my friend's lens or the other person's lens. So I've grown to be more sensitive about it. Because I think it's important. I think you should be able to have open conversations about your mental health and how you're doing or what type of support you need from those around you without it being stigmatized. And I think it's just like another topic that we unfortunately don't spend a lot of time talking about.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it takes a village. It really does. You can't do it alone. And you want as many people on your side as possible. A lot of those biases that people have, I feel like just come from not understanding, you know, not understanding what anxiety or what depression or what other mental health issues, how that affects your day-to-day life.
Right.
And that's where the conversation comes in. That's where the dialogue comes in, where you know, you kind of have to open that person's eyes and be like, hey, this is what it is. And this is how I would need your support. Mm-hmm. It's really just laying it out for them, because honestly, you don't really understand what it's like to go through anxiety and depression until you go through it. So it's people aren't realistically going to completely understand if they haven't been through it. Mm-hmm. They can sympathize with you and they can try to understand. That's really all you can ask for.
Right.
You know, they're never going to get the full, and I would never ask anybody, I would never wish upon anyone to understand what those feelings are, but their willingness to understand is what's vital to your recovery and your mental health too.
And similar to that, so I know that you talked about sort of like your toolkit of what you do day in and day out to make sure that you stay happy and that you feel like you're sort of like in your right state of mind. But I guess between your experiences, Wesley, as well as Banza, like that fit of finding the right person, that when you're in the process of seeking out a therapist or seeking out somebody to talk to, like talk a little bit more about that process. Cause I feel like I've heard it now many times that, you know, I just feel that I can't find the right person that gets me, or sometimes there is frustration because you're going through that trial and error and you can't just find the right person that understands like your background or some of like the identity and racial issues that exist like in our society. So I'd love to kind of just talk through that and kind of give people a sense of like at least security that this is something that is common in most people of color's experience, just because given our backgrounds, we're just unique in sort of what our needs and what we might need within our support system within the realm of our own mental health.
Yeah. So that has been a long process in my journey. And I'm just coming to realize that it really does matter who the type of person that you seek out for your therapy, whether that's, you know, their race, their culture, their age, their gender, you know, all of those matter. And in my experience, I realized that I open up more to somebody who looks like me, as I'm sure a lot of people do. So I'm just speaking specifically in the New York area. I can't really speak to other cities, even though I'm sure it's very similar. But I look for pretty much a young woman of color. And that takes my insurance. That is very important.
Yeah, that's true.
I will not pay out of pocket for these services.
Yeah, major and medical is kind of expensive when it comes to
that sliding
like
scale.
This.
Ain't no sliding scale. Like, I don't know what they base that off of, but
$300 per session.
It's that's yeah, it's insane. Hard out here. But even just taking, so if you take the broader population of therapists, if you have insurance, that I saw what you did in the previous episode where you're shrinking. What was it? The dating pool?
The based dating on your pool, yeah.
I'm going to do the same thing, but I don't have percentages with it. So if you take the full extent of like therapists in the New York area, a portion is only covered by your insurance. So that already cuts your pool. God knows how many people.
But can say that it's at least like half.
Definitely.
Okay.
At least half. Because
that's
behavioral. It's hard in general in healthcare. Behavioral health services are a traditionally low reimbursement area. So there's no incentive for providers to really go through, you know, getting credentialed with all these insurances for what money, you know? So there's already that, you know? And so you have this select group of providers that take your insurance. You look for somebody that's on the younger side, which is becoming less and less because a lot of med students aren't choosing to go the mental health route because they're not going to get paid as much as if they were to do any other specialty.
Yeah, okay.
So cuts it up, take another half. Then you apply the filter of looking for someone of color. My God, that I could probably count on like maybe my two hands how many people that is that I've found, and I've used multiple websites to look for these people.
Yikes.
And then finding a young woman of color is like one hand. It's crazy because that I've had experiences with white therapists, older white women, older white men.
They don't get you.
They don't. They really don't. They try though.
Yeah.
I can appreciate them trying, but they just, I didn't feel comfortable enough to open up completely to them. And that's so important to get out of therapy. You need to be able to immerse yourself in it in order to get the most out of it. And the only way I could do that is with a certain type of people. And I guess maybe that's calling me high maintenance when it comes to therapy, but like, that's what I need for me. And that is tough to find. So it's so hard to find. I don't know if you want to speak to your experience.
From my experience, it's pretty much the same, because it's just but more for anger management. Don't ask. just to say, let's just say, like, I pushed somebody and I might got into an incident in upstate New York where I punched a guy, and I may or may not have chipped his teeth, a couple of his teeth. So sorry. if you listen to this, I'm sorry. I really didn't mean it. I was just drunk and I just punched you because you stepped on my shoes. I'm sorry.
Oh my goodness.
Were they like Jordans or something? Like, were they like?
No, I don't think so. It might have been Pumas. I'm not even sure anymore. I don't even remember the incident.
Pumas?
I know, right? That's like the stupidest thing. I sound like a Chris Rock cliche right now, but I did some stupid shit. And the second incident was, this was an intramural game. So intramural game, they don't count. I was just really competitive, and this guy was just yapping away, talking shit. So like, he was really guarding me up close. We're playing basketball, and I still regret this to this day. I had the ball up top, and I'm doing hand motions. And then my elbow is like out. So I swung my elbow in his face to clear the ball. And then they called me with a double technical, got ejected. I got to the ref's face. And then it's not funny. But then like I took his glasses off his face and I threw them.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
You were like Hulk status.
I wanted to win. I'm sorry.
So competitive.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to win.
I get that competitiveness.
Yeah, definitely. I was just like, fuck, I shouldn't have done that. Camp police ended up getting called. He didn't charge for assault because I really didn't saw it. Just took his glasses from him and I threw him. So I ended up paying for one of his lens because it cracked. And then they sent me to anger management class, which I was kind of like, what the fuck? I got in front of Res Life and everything. This was just like, yeah, well, he's a good student, blah, blah, blah. Let's just take him to anger management. So then the process of me going to the anger management, they assigned me a counselor, which was like, this is rural upstate New York, which was like super white. She has, there's no way you can understand me. And I'm going through all these like prior incidences in my life where this may have been triggered from that. And she's just like, oh, okay. She's just writing stuff down. I'm like, you're not going to talk? So I was like, no, I can't do this. So I went to another person, this white guy, same thing. So finally, like, I'm like, man, if I don't get through these anger management treatment classes or whatever, because I assigned for like the whole year, like every 5 days I had to go and check in.
I was like, that's pretty frequent.
Yeah, I was like, man, if I don't get through these classes, man, they're going to kick me out of school. And I got to find a therapist. I got to find one quick. So finally, through a friend of a friend, met this guy, who just happened to be the therapist across the street from where my school was at. And this is a guy of color, of course. And I was explaining to him incidences in my life where it's made me really angry or really helpless and how I felt and stuff. And then he was just like, yeah, I can understand you. And then he went through incidences in his life where, you know, he felt the same way too. I was just like, wow, this guy gets me. Like, he gets where I'm coming from. So that's how I found my person. And so every 5 days I had to go see this man. I was like, shit. That was every time it was something else. I was like, this is what made me feel angry at this time, blah, blah, blah. And then went through like sort of like a treatment plan on how to kind of control my anger. Not that Steve Urkel 3-2-1-1-2-3, what the heck is bothering me? We ain't doing anything. You never seen that episode?
No.
Where Carl Winslow had anger management. He had anger problems. It was because of Steve. And then he was supposed to go see a therapist, but then he saw a pamphlet and then decided that the pamphlet was going to like help him out. Ended up getting like a heart attack because Steve was pissing him off so bad that he ended up getting a heart attack. And then they had to send him to the hospital because he had high blood pressure. Oh my God. And Steve was giving him high blood pressure. And then it culminated in the episode to a point where like Steve had crashed into the garage or something like that with his Ford Isetta. And then like, if you know what a Ford Isetta is, if you know what a Ford Festive is, think of that, but smaller. he crashed it into the garage and then he's like, 3, 2, 1. 1, 2, 3. What the heck is bothering me? You. And he started chasing Steve around the car, but then he ended up getting like a heart attack. Yeah. Nah, it was nothing like that. But it was going through some treatments, like, you know, think about certain aspects of, you know, what's the trigger, what makes you, you know, what's making you tick, how to combat certain things in my own, at least in for my space and what I'm doing. Like, not to be so competitive, even though the games really don't count. so
it's like, let's put this in perspective.
Right. Are you making money off of this? Like, are you, is this any net
that
gain
is a
besides?
Valid question.
Yeah. Like, is there any intrinsic values coming out of this except for you working out and having fun? I'm like, you know what? That's right. I'm not gaining anything out of this except school guys on the basketball court, but that's really about it. And then just going through like some experiences that I've had where it's made me really angry, or even some traumatic experiences that I've had in my own personal life. So yeah.
Do you feel like you grew from going to to anger management and having like these frequent touch bases where you had the chance to actually think about like the context of your actions and like why you were reacting in a certain way?
Well, actually, yeah, because it's one of the reasons why like now I have like before I never used to have like an hour or two where I called quiet time that Lena D is referring to is when I go, you know, for like an hour or so, I'm just like, hey, babe, I just want to chill out and relax. I just, you know, want to, you know, look up some computer stuff that I've been looking at for a while, or just want to lay down. Just want to be alone for a little bit. You know, I'll be ready in an hour or so, but I just want to, you know, I guess degauss or de-stress or whatever you want to call it is what I want to do. That's like the first time I've ever done that. And I've always tried to institute that because I know like now, if I don't get that, I'll go crazy. Like I'll just be like, I'll get angry for no reason. Like what the hell? What? Blah, blah, blah. The little things that make me angry. You put the hair in the sink? What the fuck? Like
everything is a trigger.
Yeah, everything is a trigger at this point. I just don't want that to happen. So I'm just like, yeah, you know, the hair is not really a problem. It's annoying, but that's not like the end of the world. Like you could just pick it up and throw it out yourself. Come on, Jeff, stop being stupid. But it's stuff like that. If I get into an argument with somebody, like rather than like be too direct, like I'm confrontational to a point where like I know when I'm going to get angry is when I'm just like, yeah, I probably, because I know that's when I say the craziest, harshest things to people is when I get like rage level up to a million. Like it's over. Like I'll say some things that are very harsh to a point where I'll regret it. I know I'm going to, as soon as I say, I'm like, wow, what the fuck did I just say? So I know to like kind of step back away from the argument. And I was like, is this really like an argument that you're really going to be passionate about? Let's say, think about it in like a year, even in like 2 weeks or so, you're going to think back and be like, oh yeah, well we fought about sneakers and she didn't like these Jordans. So I got mad at her because she didn't like this. Like, is that really like an argument that you really want to keep with like somebody who's your friend? Probably not. So it's kind of like those things. It's like, okay, I can argue up to a certain point and then you know what? It's better to just walk away, because a lot of people don't do that. They don't like to walk away. Yeah. They just want to keep going. Like they just want to keep rah, rah, rah. Like, nah, I'm not like that anymore.
So I know that to your point, some people don't like walking away. At least you can control walking away. Like you can walk away from the situation.
Yeah.
But what if the other person eggs you on? Have you developed
any walking.
You just leave.
Keep stepping. Like, no, because like, it's not worth going throwing blows over. Like, there's very few things in life that are ready for me to be throwing blows over. And that's not one of them. 95% of the arguments that I have with people is not, it's not worth it. Like, I'm just going to let it go. And I'm let you handle it and take care of it any the way that you want to take care of it. And you see the results or
and that's
whatever.
The difference between real life and Love and Hip Hop.
Yeah.
Where nobody walks away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And until someone drags you away.
And I
feel like they get paid to fight. Like, it's just round sure. Episode one is this person versus that person. Episode
producers
two.
Are like, oh, you know, this chick called you a bitch. And yeah. Trying to get you all riled
it's
up.
Like, no, that's not
Mama Juana. And you're like, I want to fight you.
I want to fight. No. It's
but,
not worth
that's
it.
But I think money. Sometimes, like, I know that I'm always tempted, so I can be fine walking away. But if somebody taunts me, that can sort of be more of a trigger for me to just be like, oh, okay, so you want some of this? Or, oh, you dared me? Okay, fine, I'll slap you in the face. Like,
that has actually happened. Lena D has done that. This guy dared her to slap him in the face. I'm in the other room. Everybody's probably going to be like, where were you? I was in the other room talking to this guy. Chopping it up, he was having a new baby, life was good for him, and all I hear in the background was, oh, you got slapped. I'm like, oh shit, I think I know what's going on.
Yeah, so that's why I was asking, because I think the next step is, like, one thing is to walk away, and then if the other person leaves you alone, then it's fine, because, like, both of you have walked away from the situation, both of you were mature. But when that somebody isn't as mature, like, are there other things that you can have in your toolkit such that you're not me, and then slap them in the face because they just dared you to slap them in the face.
Man, how about let's not put alcohol into the mix?
Well, if that's already happened, you can't really take that away.
Yeah, that is a big contributor.
Yeah.
So I think it's to your point of, like, knowing what triggers you, but I think sometimes you need to have, like, a plan B and a C when you get into certain, like, really tough situations where, you know, it's better to walk away. It's better that you don't engage, especially when it's really causing, like, a lot of stress and it's going to cause something like an altercation or something worse, like something physical. Because those things do happen. I mean, a lot of people have short temper, at least. That's also, I think, like, something that has to do with how you manage conflict and part of your mental health sometimes if you're just very combative about things, which I tend to be, but I've been better about it. I've been a lot better about it.
Has she really? Can you attest?
It comes and goes.
No, I don't really, like, engage in
what
a really crazy way anymore.
All right.
I've managed to, like, not curse people out. Instead, I've just tell them to get out.
Okay, like, in the last
cats out of the
year, Lena D's been pretty good about that. Okay, maybe last two years, she's been good about that.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been calmer about stuff, because that is one of my things. I do have a very short temper. I never really considered a mental health issue, though. So.
And this is why the crazy Latina thing is always out there. So this is just okay.
What, like, do you do?
No big deal.
Like, what have you have? What are some of the things that you do to, when you feel like your temper is getting there? What do you do?
So I think about
combative.
How I've reacted in the past, like instances where I haven't been the proudest of my reaction or my actions, where I've let it get physical. Where the cops had to be called.
Why are you always lying?
So I think of those instances, and I think about the trigger points of what got me that angry, that I just didn't care. And I was, like, you know, loving hip hop in it, world starring it up in anybody's face. And now I think about it and I'm like, well, I'm not, that was like 5 years ago. That was like 7 years ago, whenever it happened. And I think of myself as growing as a person and learning from my mistakes. Mm-hmm. So I think about progress. So in the spirit of me wanting to make progress with how I deal with conflict and how I deal with certain things that I don't like in my life, once I start thinking about that, it calms me down, and it either forces me to get quiet and not necessarily lash out with the first thing that I want to say, which gives me time to think about, okay, like, how is this going to proceed? Is this somebody that I'm really good friends with? If they are, is it worth keeping their friendship? And I start rationalizing like why this is happening and who it's happening with. And most times, like, I'll express that I'm not satisfied with the situation. And I actually do end up getting very diplomatic in how I react. Like, I'm not like, you fucking bitch, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't get as irritated and get in their face like that anymore.
That was 3.5 years ago.
I just end up saying, if you feel that way, that's how you feel, but I deserve better than this. So if this is how you're thinking about things, then you just should just leave. Like, we shouldn't talk anymore. Like, we shouldn't be friends anymore. And I try to have a conversation. And even though I might still be yelling, because I still feed off of like the other person's energy. So if we're talking, I can talk, but if I feel like that person starts raising their voice, then I'll also raise my voice. That's that part I haven't quite managed yet. Mm-hmm. But I at least don't let it get physical. I don't use like a whole bunch of curse words anymore. I try to express what I'm dissatisfied with and have them either walk away if I've decided that that the situation isn't going to get any better than where it is. Or if they really want to resolve it, then I'll say, you know what, this isn't the time to talk about this stuff. If we really are serious about talking about it, let's talk about it a week from now after we've cooled down. And I've actually become more comfortable kind of like pushing conversations into the future instead of like I used to be somebody that wanted to resolve things right away. And it would bother me if things wouldn't get resolved right away.
Yeah.
But because I've gotten comfortable with knowing that I control my actions and I can't control other people's actions. And like that's a lot more present within my state of mind than it used to be before. I'm comfortable like not having to talk about an issue until like a week or 2 weeks from now. Or even like if Wesley and I get into a fight, I've always wanted to be on top. Like, we need to resolve this now.
Yeah.
And then now I'm okay with giving him his quiet time, walking away. And then I'll bring it up the next day or some other time. But I'm more comfortable with that uncertainty because at the end of the day, I realize that as long as they're not my actions, there's always going to be uncertainty. So it's a matter of understanding why the other person feels like that, if it's somebody that I genuinely care about and if it's somebody that doesn't really fit within my life. Because like I've also embraced like the whole concept of getting rid of toxicity in your life and not having toxic people in your life, then I'm okay walking away. And I realize that even that action, even though it wasn't my first desired action, still adds a lot of tranquility and peace to my life. So that's kind of how I've dealt with it.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. I have a lot of issues, but anger is not really one of them.
You sure?
Well, listen, I feel like if someone really pushed me there, if someone pushes you there, everybody has a tolerance, but hasn't been an issue for me, actually.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like, I never really thought of it as an issue.
Yeah.
I was like, well, nah, bitch, you probably should be acting like that. I was like, you probably shouldn't be slapping that dude. He was like a full like foot and a half taller than you were.
Yeah, and I'm not even in the room or in the vicinity.
I was like, you have a point.
And normally I would be like, I should probably talk you down. I was like, no, you probably shouldn't do that. And then the weird part about that whole story was that we went downstairs and they were in the same elevator. And then this guy was just like, oh, well, you know, you slapped me, so I should slap you back. I'm like, boss, that's not happening in this elevator. I was like low key getting angry. I was like, let me just calm down.
Would have been a Solange and Jay-Z issue.
Yeah, like calm down in this elevator before I go crazy. Because it was him, and then it was like Spliff Star. I call him Spliff Star because it was just like, anybody who knows like a little bit of hip hop knows that Busta Rhymes had this hype man, and the hype man's name was Spliff Star. He was just there just to hype shit up. And his hype man was there, but he saw me. I don't think he wanted any part of that because he was just in the corner. He didn't say anything. He was just smiling like, Yeah, that's not happening, boss. Like, you're not going to do nothing in this elevator. I'm telling you right now. You just walk away.
No, so. But I mean, like, yeah, so stuff like that. I'm just like, okay, don't hit anybody. Just like,
don't put Wesley in uncomfortable positions because you got dared to slap somebody.
Yeah. So I try to do that too. Just make it fun. It's like, you're out, you should be having fun. So yeah. So I guess, like, in a way, in a very roundabout way, as I was like becoming more aware of like mental health issues myself personally and being supportive to friends that needed me to be supportive of them in their journeys and their mental health journeys, I kind of indirectly started changing like how I manage my own mental health. For somebody that has, like, let's say it was me of like, I don't know, 8 years ago, that wasn't necessarily very aware of how to manage their own mental health, like, how would you encourage someone to go through that process on their own? Like, how do they start that?
Well, that's a good question. It just know when you start, it's a process. It's not, you're not going to come to all of these realizations in a week or a month or maybe even a year. It's really a process of knowing yourself and knowing your triggers. And that takes time. I mean, it really starts with mindfulness. It starts with being aware of when you feel upset or when you feel angry or when you feel something other than, you know, content or happy. And in that moment, asking yourself why you feel like that. Really getting into those feelings. It could be, I'm a huge cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, fanatic, because I truly believe that. And that's basically like this understanding in psychology that your thoughts drive your emotions. So, you know, you're feeling a certain way and my anxiety is having all of these thoughts and I'm feeling a certain way, but I'm not understanding why I'm feeling that way because I don't realize that what I'm thinking about. So for me, it was really identifying those thoughts in that moment and going through those thoughts, like really peeling back the layers to see where these thoughts come from. So is it realistic? And maybe in the moment might not be the best time to do this type of analysis because you're feeling the emotions and your thought process is already kind of skewed. But having this process of understanding when you feel off and taking the time to figure out why. And it won't come easy in the beginning. Definitely not in the beginning, because humans are complex beings. Like we think about a lot of things. A lot of things drive our feelings, our behaviors, our emotions. So if you start paying attention to it and it's just that awareness of it, you'll start to see the trends and you'll start to be able to connect the pieces and just know that it takes time.
Yeah.
Especially for anger too. Knowing what your triggers are. Like if you feel angry, just sitting down, asking yourself, why the fuck do I feel angry? And then going through like what happened today that made you feel that way. And then once you understand what gets you to feel that way, you can start to see things before they happen. You know, you see something happening and you're like, oh, that's going to get me pissed. And then you know, just that awareness is enough to take action. So the way, I'm trying to remember the way one of my therapists put it. It was like, you see something coming and before you feel the full-fledged emotion, you have this buffer of awareness. You're aware that it's happening. And even if you don't do anything, that buffer alone is enough for you to realize what's happening. It's enough for you to kind of put it in perspective. It's enough for you to say, hey, this is my anger. And then you can't stop yourself from feeling a certain way. Like that's extremely unrealistic. You're gonna feel sad as a human being. You're gonna feel angry, but it's just what you do with that emotion is what's important. And that awareness will be able to give you a pause before you feel that way. So you can kind of see it coming.
Yeah, that's a good tip. And I think it also fits in with being able to step back from the situation, which is like something that I do now. But I feel that a lot of me stepping away from the situation didn't happen because I was necessarily like hyper self-aware in those situations, I felt, or when those things happened or when like those incidents took place, I felt that it was more because of conversation that I was having with Wesley or friends afterwards. And they were like, well, like, you seem pretty chill. And then all of a sudden, like, it blew up. And I was like, okay, well, let me start thinking about it. So I would almost say, like, I probably would have found this very helpful if I would have been thinking about it at the time. But almost keeping, like, a journal of your feelings and, like, understanding, like, what are, like, if you can't sit down and say your triggers are this, like, just kind of observing yourself and writing those things down. And then you can really start thinking about, like, what are those triggers? Like, what made you feel a certain way? How can you start thinking through that in a different way such that you can allow yourself to build that buffer so that you don't blow up, which is kind of what happened in my situations. But so I think that I would have found that very helpful. I wish that I would have been having this conversation 5 years ago or something.
Yeah. There's also like a misunderstanding when it comes to writing too, because I feel like for the longest time, I thought writing was you had to write every single day. You had to write, dear diary, this is everything that happened today. Love, Bonza. Like, no, that's not how it has. It can literally be, if you see my journal, I have months. It's bad. I don't want to encourage that. But like, I have spaces, like big gaps in between some of my dates, and some of my notes are literally just bullets. Some of them, like, you don't have to be so detailed. Like, whatever is on your mind, however you want to write it. If you want to draw, some people find that very therapeutic. But yeah, I would definitely suggest writing, and then you can really look at each day and see what, if there's a trend in the thoughts that you thought before you felt that feeling.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. I actually want to get back to having like a journal. I was thinking about it the other day.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to find like the right format, because I'm like, am I going to carry this book around me all the time?
So that's another thing, is like, it doesn't need to be anything, you know, because I'm very like, I'm way too organized. Like, it's a problem. So, like, I have to do... That's why I was, like, getting... I wouldn't write, because I thought you had to do it every single day. You had to write every single thing down. Like, it can be a little notebook on the side of your bed. And whenever you feel off, just grab it and write something. You know? Words. They don't even have to be full sentences. You can write how... You don't have to be formal. It's not an essay. You're not going to get graded on it. Like, it's literally whatever you make it. It doesn't have to be a set... Like, you know, process.
Format or
yeah,
process.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can, one day you might feel like making a table. Another day you might want to make, you know, a circle graph. Another day you just want to do bullets. Another day you might want to draw. Another day you might want to color. Like, you know, it's whatever you make it on that day.
Yeah.
But starting somewhere is definitely the first start, you know? It can't happen unless you start somewhere.
I think I'm going to start on my phone, because I always have that thing.
Phones are good too. I know there's a bunch of apps for like journaling.
Oh.
And you can like passcode it and everything if you don't want people to look at it.
Hey.
There's tons of, oh my God, there's so many meditation apps. There's so many like mental health apps out there that people should definitely explore if they're very phone savvy.
Do you have any like off the top of your mind?
I do. So I use this guided meditation app called Insight Timer.
Oh, okay.
And by the way, I don't pay for apps. I think that's like one of the stupidest things ever. So,
you're like, I'm all free. About the good, like free resources. Yes, the free 99.
Exactly. Free 99. So Insight Timer is great. If I don't like listening to raindrops and just meditate. I need someone to guide me through it, mm-hmm. especially with how to handle my thoughts when I am meditating. And Insight Timer has so many different categories. They have one for sleep. They have one for anxiety, depression. They have one for gratitude. They have one for self-compassion, anger. Mm. They have so many different types of meditations. And so many people around the world upload their own. So I use that. I know there's one, I don't know if it's called Gratitude or My Gratitude or something, but it's an app that reminds you every day to write down 5 things that you're grateful for. And I know there's been a ton of studies out there that say when you express gratitude, your overall feelings of well-being are, you know, they're generally higher than anybody else. I have some like workout apps, you know, but as far as mental health, I know that Facebook actually launched a called Wobot, W-O-E-B-O-T. And it's basically this robot on Facebook Messenger that checks in with you every day and asks you how you're feeling. And then, you know, kind of crunches the data and trends it after a few weeks to let you know, helps you identify your thoughts better and your feelings better. I tried it out and it was pretty cool. It was weird at first because it was like a robot asking me how I'm feeling, but it was cool. It was a good reminder to think about how I'm feeling in that moment.
I think I know why they did that, because they've been having a lot of incidences where like people are getting shot on Facebook Live. Like it's been, since they rolled out Facebook Live, it's been
some crazy shit.
It's some crazy stuff that happens, man. Like, I just didn't realize like how Facebook Live could be such a powerful thing of change. But then another point, you got people killing each other on the same platform. It's so unrestricted. So I'm glad they did something like that, where they did something for everybody, like the common good of mental health. I mean,
yeah, I don't think it was Facebook that created. I think it was somebody else who worked with Facebook.
Gotcha.
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was a startup, because I read it in Business
Week. Okay.
Then it was like a whole spread. So,
yeah.
But yeah, no, it's crazy what people can do now and what they can broadcast for everybody's eyes to see.
Right.
When you never really asked to see any of it.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too. It's like sometimes like social media can be used for good, but I also hear a lot of times, and I've seen a few articles, I think they were published last year, where it's like,
I mean, people, I can't use that for stalking? What?
What? What?
Ain't nobody said you couldn't use it for stalking.
I mean, everybody uses it for stalking.
Exactly.
But to the point that people are just like, well, what's really being put out on Facebook is just like the highlights of everyone's lives. So it makes other people feel as if like their lives aren't as great, because either they're not having babies, or they're not getting married, or they're not going on these trips, or this or that. So it's interesting. It's like, it can be like a really good tool, and there are some other like apps and like social media like tools and apps out there that you could use for good. But sometimes you also have to be careful that you keep track of like how much time you're spending on it
and how it makes you feel
yes.
It's interesting you brought that up, because what are you doing when you're perusing through like Instagram or Snapchat or whatever? You're probably waiting for the train, or you're just at home doing nothing, or you're taking a shit, or like doing whatever you have to do. You're basically doing nothing, you know?
Yeah.
And you see like all these pictures, right, of people traveling, and they're probably posting pictures that they took from their trip like 6 months ago, to be honest. So like, you're looking at all these pretty people doing these pretty things and their pretty lives and all this like fake stuff. Like,
oh, more man. Than half of it is fake. You know what this sounds like? An episode of Black Mirror. This exactly sounds like it.
It is, that with the one, ratings.
Yeah, with the ratings. I was just like, what?
But
yeah,
it's true. Crazy. Like, there is a huge correlation between social media and mental health. Like, people are like, oh, they'll peruse Instagram for like an hour a day and they'll say they feel fine. But I feel like it's subconsciously affecting you. You know, it's subconsciously. And I'm very guilty of comparing myself. That's one of the things that I struggled with for years now. And social media does not help with that at all. So like, even now I'm trying to limit my use, maybe like post something every so often, but I try not to do the every day need to log on if I miss something. You know, I'm all of a sudden not a person or like connected to the world.
Yeah.
Fuck the world. I hate people.
You're like, I need my bands of time.
Yes.
Fuck them.
I'm that person that needs to be home and do nothing. Like, don't bother me. That's why I live alone. I hate people, but I love them.
I hate people.
But they're interesting.
Yeah, but it's true. It's like the littlest things can impact how you feel.
Yeah.
And I think another thing too is how you manage with uncontrollables and uncertainty. So, for example, today I had to commute very, very far. So it's like an hour and 45 minute commute. And I wanted to get back in time for our session because I knew that we were going to be meeting. And I had buffered about 30 minutes. I get off the shuttle to get to my second point of my commute, which is to get on the train, and find that the train has been canceled. and that the next one isn't for another hour.
Jesus Christ.
So I looked at it and I was about to like start cursing. And then I was like, oh, wait, there's this thing called Lyft. So I literally just saw it, kept walking, ordered the Lyft, and I was in the Lyft like 4 minutes earlier than I would have even been on the train. And I actually ended up being okay in terms of time. But it's just like those things. It's like sometimes so much of your state of mind is also influenced by your own actions.
For sure.
And you can control that stuff. It's like you said, you don't have to be on social media an hour a day every day. You can, like, there's like, it's like, and if you do feel like you have to, it's like start peeling back why you think you have to. Is it because you're stalking someone?
Man. It's hard, bro. It's hard. I think it's more habit, honestly.
Yeah. But I think that sometimes, like, I used to feel like, oh my God, I haven't seen what other people are up to. I don't have time for this. And then I was like, you know what? Fuck other people. Like, I have so much shit on my plate right now.
Exactly.
So now, like, I'm completely comfortable. Like, people will be like, oh, like, you haven't posted in a while. Are you still living? And I'm like, the reason I'm not posting is because I'm living.
Right.
Like, I'm, like, having, and that's another thing, too, that I'm just realizing. It's like, I've actually tried to shift from just being on social media when I'm out with people and, like, actually trying to enjoy being there in the moment. And then I'll try to take some pictures. And then if I post it later, it's fine. But I used to, like, have, like, this thing where, like, it's Instagram. I have to do it right now.
Otherwise, I need to tag everybody in all of your pictures.
I don't know. Some of your friends and you still do that, but that's...
A ton of people do. Like, I'm still guilty of it. We're all still guilty of it, but it's I feel like a lot of people don't realize that, though. And either they don't realize it or they realize it and they just don't give a fuck. They don't care. Like, some people can really be on Instagram every day and feel completely content with their lives. Unfortunately, I don't think I am one of those people. So do you, boo-boo. Like, do whatever you think works for you. Like, God bless you if you can go on and see all these pictures of, like, whatever. The one thing I do miss, though, are, like, the memes. And you know, just the funny shit that people be posting. Like, I wish I could just filter just to get those.
Yeah, and now it's, like, annoying with the whole algorithm. But, like, I digress.
Yep. You know, I had a psychiatrist who I had one session with her. And all she talked about was Facebook algorithms.
What?
Sorry, Instagram algorithms.
What for?
Why?
And she showed me her Instagram. I'm like, what?
In her session?
Really? Yes. She was like, did you realize that this is how Instagram does it? Like, now they prioritize this. And she's like, look, I only got like 35 likes on this, but I see like other people getting like 400 because they're buying bots. I'm like, this is about me. This isn't about you.
What the fuck?
Yes, that's why it was only one session.
You're like, okay, bye. Time. I'm not speaking to you ever again.
I was like, I feel like I'm your therapist now.
Time to go.
Clearly, you don't know what your job is. Oh, speaking of seeking out therapy, or in this case, it was one session because you were trying her out and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I
wasn't going back, paying $40 for that.
Yeah, you're like, no. Nah, but for people that do want to go out and seek out therapy, I know I've been overwhelmed by the process, like the whole finding my insurance that covers it. I've been like, you know what? I'll be my own therapist today. But so for people that are kind of like me, that are just like, what are the things that I have to think about? Like, what do you suggest for, like, what are some things that people should keep in mind when they're seeking out
a therapist? So everybody's primary concern is usually money. So I would first, you know, I've worked in healthcare for some years now, and insurance companies are literally the bane of my existence. Like, I cannot stand calling them. I can't. So that point, I understand that turns a lot of people off. But if you want to get the shit covered, you got to, you know, do your homework with your insurance. If you're lucky enough to have insurance, insurance companies have, like, usually they have search engines on their website where you can see if certain providers are covered under your plan.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you how much you pay out of pocket for each session. If they don't, you should call them. And if they don't have any of that, then you shouldn't have that insurance. So I would start there, especially if money is a concern. And then from there, what I like to do is I start at the insurance company's website and I'll take a person's name and I'll Google it and see if any pictures come up, because I am specifically looking for a young woman of color. Although if you're just starting out, and you're having trouble finding somebody, I would still keep your options open because there are a lot of people out there that are phenomenal therapists that might not be in your, you know, in your filters. Mm-hmm. So start there. Those are some tips that I would do.
All right. Oh, let me get down to the meat and potatoes. What's the best one? What's the best health insurance provider for behavioral health?
That's difficult. It varies so much. Damn. It varies.
I was trying to get that golden egg.
It varies based on your plan. So also, you have to note that there's different types of behavioral health therapists. Mm-hmm. You can go the top of the tree, technically, if you want to, you know, top of the education tree. Psychiatrists are MDs. They're medical doctors that specialize in psychology. So they're the, sometimes nurse practitioners can do this depending on the state, but they're the ones that prescribe the medication. They're the ones that you have to see if you want to be on medication. You probably have regular appointments with them.
No, I'm good.
So if medication is, for some people, it's
makes them well-adjusted.
They need it. Okay. Like I have been on a few.
Okay.
And I would say they have, along with other things, that they've saved my life.
Okay.
Like there's certain points in your life where if you're like, I can't even like describe the space where I was. It was like, it was dark and there was no light in sight. I was in therapy. I was doing all of this stuff, but it wasn't working fast enough. And I was also suicidal. So if you're at that point, you need help now.
Right.
And you should consider medication. Medication is not for life. I don't think it should be for life.
Right.
But to get you through where you are so that you can fulfill your day-to-day responsibilities, it's something that you should heavily consider.
Right.
And that's where you go to a psychiatrist. I'm pretty sure there's nurse practitioners that specialize in psychology. That they'd be the next step down, and sometimes they can prescribe medications. And then you have psychologists, which are, you know, licensed psychologists. They either got their bachelor's or master's in psychology. And then you have social workers, and a lot of social workers specialize in mental health and substance abuse and anger management, things like that.
Right.
For insurance companies, it really does vary. It really does vary. And okay. If you have different options for insurances through your employer, through, you know, whatever, however you get it, I would talk to them up front and ask what the co-pays would be like or deductibles would be like if you're looking for these specific services.
Gotcha.
Definitely reach out to your insurers and get that verbal, yes, this is how much you would pay every single time you see this specific provider. Because if it could vary per provider based on their credentials.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then others, if you can do out of pocket, you got money, but like, no, do that. Good. Like if you could pay out of pocket, do that. Some therapists, especially in private practices, have sliding scales. So I'd ask if they have that. And that's pretty much your cost per session is based on your income. So that's sometimes an option. Still pretty expensive. Insurance is definitely the cheapest way to go, but it varies. Gotcha. So you got to do your research. But it's research that hopefully you only have to do once. And once you do it once, you'll know what to do next time if you need to find somebody different.
Gotcha. Okay.
Are there such things as like therapist reviews?
Definitely. I know Psychology Today has profiles for reviewed psychologists. ZocDoc, if you are able to schedule appointments through ZocDoc.
Is it bad if I say Yelp?
No, Yelp is great.
Oh, okay.
All of, I mean, they have the same types of people as ZocDoc in like all these other places.
Yeah, that's true.
Yelp, I've actually never used that. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That is a good point.
I was using Yelp and correlating it with ZocDoc and then correlating to see if they take my insurance, which is always a no. It's like, oh, fuck. All right.
Yeah. Next. You find someone you love and then you see what they accept and they don't accept it.
And you're like, just, what the
all of this works for nothing. Also, another thing you have to consider is if you even find that perfect psychologist or therapist or behavioral health provider.
If they're taking patients.
Are they taking new patients?
Hey.
Because not everybody is taking new patients.
Yeah. I called one time. It was like, perfect. Takes my insurance. He lives right here. Seems like a good guy. Read the reviews. Spectacular.
called
him. He's like, I'm not taking new patients. I'm like, oh, what? Yeah. But why?
How long does that last? Do you have like?
It depends what their patient caseload is. You know, some people, if they decrease their avail, they like if they go from weekly to biweekly, maybe they'll have a biweekly spot open. Mm-hmm. It depends on their current patient population. But another thing to consider is also availability, because they're. I was also looking for a therapist that was available after 5 p.m. because I work a traditional 9-to-5 job, right, or on the weekends. And you could understand how few and far between those people are, right, let alone the young woman of color filters. Yeah. So all of those things take into consideration. If you're also thinking about doing therapy, a huge piece of advice that I would give people is to, they're providing a service to you. You're paying for a service. When you go in, you should have an idea of what you want. So if you want, and it could vary from session to session, but some therapists are like, they will sit down and just let you speak and vent. And that'll be perfect for some people. Mm-hmm. For others, like me, I some days, yes, some days, no. I value input. Like, I want to hear them talk. Right. And some therapists, I have literally been in sessions where therapists will stare at me for like 15 minutes because I don't say anything. And I just wasted like $40. Yikes. So you have, but you, it's also your responsibility as a patient to let them know what you want, because they can't read your mind.
So do you, when do you do that? Do you do that when you're looking for a therapist? Do you do that before your appointment? Do you do that at the beginning of your appointment? Like, how, when's the right time to have that conversation with? Because like you said, it might just be their style. Because I've actually seen, well, it's been on TV, but I'm assuming, that some therapists do this, but I've seen them say, well, this is your time to talk. I'm just here to listen.
Right.
And if you're the person that wants input, like, that's not going to work well for you. You're not going to walk away feeling like you got what you wanted.
Yeah.
So when's the right time to ask that?
I would say for some people, it's good to say it in the beginning. You know, if you come in and something recently happened, like a few days ago, and you just want to vent, you can just be like, you know, I just want to get everything off my chest. And they'll be like, okay, go. If you are feeling kind of like, you don't really have anything to talk about this week, but you still want to be in a therapy session, just say up front, you know, I could use a little probing. You know, I want to work on this. I want to explore my insecurities further. I want to explore, you know, whatever your goals are for therapy. And usually a therapist has a radar for this. Like, if you're not speaking a lot, they should probe. Like, that's what they do is, I read this somewhere, is that when you stop talking, they wait a certain amount of time, because studies show that if you wait this specific amount of time, as a human, you want to fill that silence with noise. Mm-hmm. So they give you every possible opportunity to speak. But if you really have nothing to say, that should be their responsibility to be like, okay, you know, like, what's next on the docket? Like, you know, to ask you questions. So they should have a radar for that too. But also just being completely transparent with your therapist at every point, in the beginning, in the middle, in the end, you know, they are fulfilling a need for you. You are paying for their service. So make sure you get the most out of your money.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, you have to have a vision of what you want.
You do. You can't. I mean, if you're new to it and you don't have a vision, tell them that too, you know, and help develop that vision. Start from childhood. I don't know, whatever issues you have from childhood, and then it'll spark more conversations. But you just have to be completely transparent with your therapist, or else you're not going to get the most out of your sessions.
And we want to make sure that everyone gets the most out of their wiser them toolkit experience.
Exactly. So
they have to do that.
You can't pour out of an empty glass.
Nope. Air is everywhere at that point. The air inside the glass isn't more valuable than the air that you're just breathing in.
Yes. Air to air. You're not drinking anything.
All right. So we're coming to the close of our episode. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about before we close out?
Yeah. So I've been in healthcare for a while, but I haven't, you know, had much experience, you know, in my career with the mental health field. A lot of it is really from personal experience. So if any of you out there
you know, are interested in some type of behavioral health venture on the business side or on, you know, the development side, technology, whatever. I'm, you know, looking for anybody. I just want to get involved in it on a professional level. So feel free to email nofreedrinks@gmail.com and hey. Lena, Dee, and Wesley will put you in contact with me and I'd love to speak with you further.
Awesome. So Bonza, it was so great to have you with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for all of the expertise and like opening up and sharing your experiences with mental health and how you manage it with therapy and like your journey. I know that it kind of got me thinking even within the episode of things that like I traditionally hadn't thought about as being part of like what defines my mental health, but everybody's is different. So hopefully after listening to this episode, our listeners out there, that you have a way that you can start thinking about this for yourself, or maybe we encouraged you to have a more open dialogue about it if it's something that you're already paying attention to. So if you have any questions, you already know how to get in touch with us. And if you have any other suggestions on what you want to hear about mental health, we think that mental health, even though it isn't specifically related to a dating or relationship or sex topic, it does influence your state of mind to engage with somebody else when it comes to dating or relationships or sex. So anything that you want us to talk about more, if you feel like there aren't other podcasts or other mediums out there that are really covering these things, let us know, because now we have our little resident expert here.
Yay!
That can help us out with that. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Peace out, Girl Scouts.
Bye, guys.
Don't forget to show us some love on social media. Follow us on Instagram by searching for _nofreedrinks, or you can even like us on Facebook. Choose your poison.